neither the title nor the scripture made it appropriately into the bulletin this morning, so, and somewhere in the communication lines between Carlos and myself that cross lines. But this morning, if you want to follow along, it'll come from the Gospel of Luke. I'll be reading from 24th chapter, verse 13 on down through 35. And the title of today's message is Emmaus Happens. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened here in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And then some of our companions, they went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us along the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem, and there they found the 11 and those who with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." And then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Here ends the reading. May God grant us wisdom and courage for interpretation. Sheree and I had only been dating a few short months. We were on break from our college classes during our freshman year, and since our houses where our families lived were hours apart in Washington State, I made the drive from the little town in western Washington, known as Ridgefield, across the Cascade Mountains to Yakima, Washington, to visit her. After a nice time visiting that first day, we turned in for the night, her in her room and me in the center of the living room floor on a humble air mattress. Sometime in the middle of the night, there's a creak coming from the front door. I'm a light sleeper. Was it a burglar? I wondered. I wasn't sure. My heart raced, and I did what any brave boyfriend would do and tucked my head beneath the covers, only allowing my eyes to look over the edge of the sleeping bag for any would-be intruders. And in the intruder came, large in stature, moving ever so slowly. All I could see was a giant silhouette of a towering man, much bigger than myself, moving slowly towards me inside the door, headed right for the place that I was laying. And so I braced myself for the worst as he leaned over my body lying on the floor. But then he said, "David?" with a question mark. "Hi, I'm Corey, Sheree's brother. Nice to meet you." As he stuck a hand out, a giant hand, mind you, in my direction. Overcome with relief, I think I offered him an enthusiastic handshake, but I cannot remember due to the time of night and my frightened condition. Someday, maybe I'll remember to ask him what he thought of that. It's one thing to not recognize someone when you have never met them or seen them before. But it's another thing when you have met them face to face many times before and you don't recognize them. We all do it. For that matter, pastors and churches do it as well. Only sometimes, not in such a flattering way. For example, right now, the United Methodist Church, the tradition from which I come to you, has put Bishop Karen Olivito on trial. We're talking about a woman who has pastored one of the largest churches in the country, Glide Memorial United Methodist Church in San Francisco, a woman who has fed thousands of hungry people, founded dozens of health clinics, pioneered youth and children programs at citywide levels, and who, if you ever met her, would come across instantly as one of the most likable, inspiring Christian leaders you've ever met. And though the United Methodist Church is quite familiar with her, they fail to recognize all that she has done in the name of Jesus and who she truly is, because you see, she's married to the love of her life, who happens to be a woman. And they're all caught up in this church trial business, and they don't see the good work that she's done right under their noses for God's purposes. Those putting her on trial are so caught up in their institutional squabbling that, in my opinion, they fail to see that Jesus has been there right under their very noses while they've been busy trying to take away her ministry. They don't recognize Jesus has already been at work through her, in her life, in her ministry. It's my bias that we Christians sometimes miss Jesus too, even despite our best efforts to be up on things and to recognize him. It is far too easy to view hardship and difficulty as an enemy of our human condition and just rush through the pain and hurry on to more comfort if we, you know, that's what we assume is just ahead. And in the process, instead of looking around while in the middle of a difficult situation, we barge forward and oftentimes miss Jesus, who was there when times weren't so easy, but we didn't look for him because we think he should be comfortable, just like we want to be comfortable. And so we get caught up in these kinds of things and rush along, and we rush right past other people who are struggling, the elderly widow who lives down the street, or the annoying coworker at our job who, by the way, struggles with depression, and we were too busy to see that Jesus was there right under our very noses with those people who were hurting, who were forgotten, who were the lost, the last, the least. Remember, Jesus told us, when you've done it for the least of these, you've done it for me. And it's not just those in need that we rush along and miss. It's Jesus that we miss when we miss those who are hurting. I am a true believer in miracles, but not the kind where the stars must be aligned a certain way, or where someone finally prays the right formula or begs God hard enough so that God intervenes in human affairs. I'm a believer in the kind of miracles that happen almost at every moment all around us. And I'm a firm believer that if we would just open our eyes, we would see miracles every day. If we could just open our eyes, for example, my bias is that we would see Jesus all around us, not as a ghostly, otherworldly figure, but Jesus represented in presence, by the very presence of the lonely, the last, the least, the lost. You see, Emmaus wasn't just a one-time miracle, my friends. It's my bias that Emmaus happens every day, when we recognize that when the hurting, the least, the last, the lost are among us, Jesus is there as well. Emmaus happens, not just once, but every day. The story of the road to Emmaus is perhaps one of the strangest of the resurrection appearances. You see, Jesus must have been with Cleopas and his friend for several hours in this story that we read a moment ago. Most of the resurrection appearances are fairly quickly moving and fleeting even. Jesus appears unexpectedly normally, speaks to one or more disciples, and then promptly disappears from sight again. But we're told that Emmaus was 7 miles from Jerusalem. I don't care who you are, that's at least a 2-hour walk. And after that, Jesus remained until a meal had been prepared, and he put the time to good use. You may recall, we just read it. He explained and interpreted all these scriptures to Cleopas and his friends, starting with Moses and going on down through the prophets. And still the two disciples failed to recognize him, and he was right there under their noses. I find that strange, don't you? How can you fail to recognize someone that you've spent so much time with? How can you fail to recognize someone whose death you're mourning right then, still? Now, I frequently fail to remember names, but I never fail to at least recognize people that I know well. More than that, I often see people perhaps on television who remind me of someone I know. Are you like that? And a turn of the head or the facial features or mannerism sometimes gives me a fleeting glimpse of someone they remind me of. Were you on TV last night? I might even ask him when I see my friend. Nope. I said, man, your lookalike was. Yet, although their hearts burned within them while this stranger was speaking about the scriptures, these two disciples weren't even reminded of Jesus, it seems. In view of the recent horrifying events of the trial and the crucifixion, Jesus was very much on their minds. Yet they noticed no resemblance at all between the stranger they met on the road and Jesus. Now, clearly, there weren't any wounds in this story on the hands or feet or the sides of Jesus as there were later that same day when he appeared in the upper room to more of the disciples. So the risen Jesus, apparently, was quite different from the earthly Jesus. And the risen Jesus was seen differently and seen differently by different people and recognized through different characteristics. Mary Magdalene recognized him when he spoke her name. The gathered disciples recognized him when they looked at his wounds. The Emmaus pair recognized him through the breaking of bread, through the brokenness of the loaf. The journey to Emmaus must have been terrific for them. Also stimulating, fascinating, perhaps enjoyable. It centered around Jesus. The talk was not only about Jesus, but was given by Jesus. But for all that he said, for all the teaching he gave, they still did not recognize him. They only recognized him when he stopped speaking and teaching and started doing. And the thing that he started doing that enabled them to recognize him was breaking something. In this case, bread, and giving it to them. Friends, brokenness is also a vital part of Christian experience. Because when we're broken, it strips away all the layers, all the veneer, and reveals the real, true, trembling, naked, vulnerable person that lies underneath. That's why Jesus, I think, enjoyed the company of social outcasts so much in his ministry, because they were broken and vulnerable people who had no facade left, no veneer, no mask left to wear. They used their energy not to build defenses around themselves, not to create acceptable social manners, but simply to survive. Gil Goulding, a Roman Catholic nun who works with people for whom brokenness is a way of life, has said this. She said, life is raw on the margins. On the margins, there is little time or energy to assume the distancing protective masks which society elsewhere seems to assume. Instead, on the margins, there is a sense of being stripped of all things that are inessential. As individuals become more aware of their real selves, an energy is devoted merely to surviving. Most people on the margins have no specific religious tradition, and yet they demonstrate a spiritual aliveness, open an exploration of real depth and quality, which puts many of us church folks to shame. Perhaps if we desire to see Christ, we must know and love him in his contemporary suffering humanity, particularly amongst the marginalized. Now, don't mistake me. I'm not advocating poverty as a way of life and all of that to be sought after in order to gain spiritual benefit. I would not advise that. Far from it. We do, however, need to support those on the margins in every possible way. Now, for most of us, let's be honest, We experience pain in our journey, but brokenness is not a way of everyday life that we're so marred by what has happened to us that we're not able to function. We're, most of us, we're not on the margins. And while we may not be rich, neither are we dragged down by grinding poverty. And thank God for that. So for us, brokenness tends to come along differently. Like the priest whose 22-year-old daughter was married in January and 6 weeks later was diagnosed as suffering from cancer. You can imagine the devastation that family, the whole family felt, especially the young couple among themselves, bereavement, divorce, redundancy, serious illness. All these things and so many more are occasions of brokenness that we all experience. There are occasions like these, occasions of immense suffering when energy is used simply for survival. And when we do that, there's no spare energy to worry about social niceties or what other people might think of us. There are occasions which strip us and leave us with nothing, no resources of our own, nothing to offer. There are occasions when we're forced to lean heavily on other people, even though we consider ourselves rugged individualists. And we have to rely on the strength of others because we have none of our own. There are occasions when we need to forget pride in our own independence and simply accept the help of other people. There are also occasions, all of these and many more, are all occasions through which we can recognize Jesus if we only have eyes to see. We may recognize Jesus in different ways, through different events, and so did the disciples. He may not appear in the form that we expect. He didn't for any of the disciples. We may not be aware that we've been walking with him for miles. Neither were the two on the road to Emmaus. But all those disciples who met Jesus after his resurrection were changed by that experience. Emmaus happens sometimes, even daily. And if we have eyes to see Jesus right under our noses, it can radically change our perspective, the way that we view life. We can become different people with different values and different priorities, even if we only begin to realize we've been with Jesus after the event. It is possible to experience brokenness without becoming so desperately poor and without the sort of traumatic shock which plunges us straight into it. It's possible to experience brokenness by becoming increasingly aware of who we actually are. It is possible to experience other people's brokenness by identifying with their sense of loss. It's possible to see Jesus right under our noses by voluntarily allowing the social veneer and masks that we tend to wear to be stripped away, by allowing ourselves to be transparently vulnerable with other people, by allowing ourselves to admit what we really think and what we actually feel, not what we hope someone thinks we feel. This sort of self-awareness quickly leads to an encounter, I believe, with the risen Christ, and we will be changed by it. The prophet Isaiah, about 800 years before the time of Jesus, describes the eventual end result of brokenness of an encounter with God when he said, "On this mountain, the Lord will make for all peoples a feast, and he will destroy the covering that is cast over all peoples, the veil that is spread over all the nations, and he will wipe away tears from all the faces. This is the Lord. We have waited for him. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation." Jesus was recognized by the disciples in that moment. He broke the bread. And we can see him too when we look for him in the broken pieces of our lives and in the broken pieces of the lives of the people around us. Let them with eyes to see find Jesus right under their very noses. Emmaus still happens.